This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, September 2nd. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the State Department has selected Denver as one of the top U.S. cities for Afghan refugee resettlement. We'll look at how citizen translators are a key part of the resettlement process in a new country. COVID cases are rising quickly among school-aged children too young to qualify for vaccines. But rates for another respiratory illness are also unseasonably high. We'll hear more from this week's State Health Department media briefing. And this time on the Cannabis Report, we take a look at an initiative that will be on the upcoming November ballot, asking voters to increase marijuana sales taxes to support the LEAP program for kids. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. Then it's a public affair. We'll hear from some of the nation's top experts on wildfires, including one based here at CU Boulder. Then at 9:30, a mix of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's coming up, so stay tuned to your community radio station. First, we'll start with the headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
A grand jury yesterday issued 32 indictments against three Aurora police officers and two paramedics involved in the 2019 death of Elijah McClain. McClain's death is believed to have been caused by a combination of the injection of an overdose of the sedative canamine by paramedics and police using dangerous methods of physical restraint, including a chokehold. The actions of the police and paramedics were captured on video. 23-year-old Elijah McClain was then taken to a hospital where he was declared brain dead days later. The governor appointed Attorney General Phil Weiser as a special prosecutor to investigate the death of Mr. McClain. Weiser's office announced yesterday that the three officers and the two paramedics all face homicide and manslaughter charges. The catamine use was classified as a deadly weapon in the assault charges. A news release from Weiser's office clarifies a grand jury indictment is, quote, a formal accusation based on a determination of probable cause that an individual committed a crime under Colorado law. All defendants are presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. The Denver Gazette reports Weiser is also doing a civil investigation into whether the Aurora Police Department has a pattern of violating civil rights of its community members. The former district attorney for Adams and Broomfield counties previously declined to press charges against the officers. Wildlife conservation groups are warning that a proposed decision by the Bureau of Land Management threatens bighorn sheep populations throughout south-central Colorado and also the habitat of the Gunnison sage grouse. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, is proposing to reauthorize domestic sheep grazing in areas that could transmit a fatal form of pneumonia to native-born bighorn sheep herds. The decision also allows domestic sheep grazing within the habitat of Gunnison sage grouse, a ground nesting bird listed as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act. The decision would allow private livestock owners to continue to lease 9 public land grazing allotments in the Gunnison Basin for at least 10 more years. The decision does ask the herders to avoid areas mapped by Colorado Parks and Wildlife as bighorn sheep summer habitat, but the livestock grazing allowed is just outside those boundaries. Greg Dyson of the group Wild Earth Guardians said that bighorn sheep have been decimated by livestock-borne diseases for more than a century. He feels it's time for federal agencies to stop prioritizing profit over saving native species on public land. You may submit protests of the decision, either in person or in writing to the BLM, by September 11th. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Renovations and construction have begun at the Boulder Table Mesa King Supers, the site of the March 22nd mass shooting. The Daily Camera reports a King Super representative has indicated the store will undergo a full design of its interior, exterior, and parking lot areas. The representative said the changes are based on feedback given by employees and community members. The Daily Camera also reports defense attorneys for the mass shooting suspect have filed a sealed motion yesterday expressing doubt about the defendant's competency to stand trial. The judge is expected to address the competency issue during the upcoming preliminary hearing scheduled for Tuesday, September 7th. State health officials indicate that in recent weeks, new COVID-19 cases are rising faster in Colorado children than adults, and hospitalizations among children have increased slightly. Unvaccinated adults, however, continue to make up the largest group of hospitalized COVID patients. Since August, state health officials have identified COVID-19 outbreaks in 14 schools, 8 child care centers, 1 summer camp, and a vacation Bible school. The state is now requiring hospitals to report how many ICU beds are available and if the ICU beds are for adults or children. We'll have more on the COVID situation in Colorado after the headlines. Boulder County health officials are warning residents that tainted and potentially deadly counterfeit pills are currently circulating in the county. The counterfeit pills, which include many brand names and similar appearances to oxycodone, M30, Xanax, and others, reportedly may contain traces of fentanyl or other dangerous additives. The additives may lead to serious medical conditions or death. Yesterday, the National Weather Service for Boulder and Denver reported the Denver area had the 3rd warmest and 5th driest summer on record. The summer period includes June, July, and August. Today's forecast for Boulder and Denver is a chance of showers and thunderstorms yet this morning, and for most of the day, partly sunny with a high near 81 for Boulder and near 82 for Denver. Tonight, there is a 20% chance of thunderstorms and showers before midnight with a low around 58 for Boulder and 61 for Denver. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 60 degrees. For KGNU, this is Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Denver is among the 19 U.S. cities identified by the State Department as urban areas best suited to receive an influx of refugees from Afghanistan. While housing costs are a consideration, the federal government noted the Denver area already has an established Afghan community, which can provide a crucial support network for those fleeing war. Large-scale resettlement requires a significant mobilization of resources and support services. Among them is translation. But translation can often fall to independent contractors or volunteers. KGNU's Elena Claver, who is a translator herself, spoke about this dynamic with Rebecca Petrus of the small nonprofit network of translators known as Red Tea.
Our mission is to support linguists around the world who work in high-risk settings, mostly conflict zones, so that they can have the protections they need to do their work.
And how do you do that? Being such a small organization, do you coordinate with other organizations for human rights?
Absolutely. Red Tea has been around since 2010, and the work is done from a macro and a micro level. So on a macro level, it's really about advocating globally for laws and policies that mitigate the threats to linguists. That's a lot of work around intergovernmental agencies, the UN, as well as governments themselves sending open letters. We have an open letter project working to change the laws and to recognize the role of the linguist in a conflict zone. So that's a lot of the work we do, letters of appeal to the relevant authorities. In addition, we have put together a conflict zone field guide for civilian translators and interpreters, and trying to help those who use linguists, use translators and interpreters, to know how to work with a linguist in a conflict zone, which can be quite difficult. So those are kind of some of the macro things that we work on. In addition, on a micro level, Red Tea has been instrumental in resettling interpreters to safety and preventing deportations back to war zones, working directly with an interpreter or contributing to opinions and letters to support the asylum seeker and in court proceedings. So both on the sort of advocacy global level and at the national levels, as well as working direct with the linguists.
So you're a very small organization and there's work all around the world, but right now, obviously, the workplace demanding the most work is Afghanistan. Could you talk just a little bit about that?
Afghanistan actually has demanded work since, I think, 2013. A lot of work has been done prior to this crisis that began just a few weeks ago in terms of open letters to governments, in terms of making them aware that this is a problem and a crisis that needs to be taken care of. Also working to improve the ability to get through the visa process in the United States. The visa process was basically completely delayed on purpose for the last few years. So trying to change that. So that work has been going on for years prior to this summer. Right now, what we're doing is trying to really advocate. Do not let it leave the news. Make sure that people are aware of the plight of the linguists. Those who have gotten out also will need a lot of support. When the evacuation ends, there will be many who have not gotten out or family members who have not, and they are very, very much in danger. So it is a lot of work for a very small organization. We have partners that we work with and have done a lot of work with the Conflict Zone Interpreter Group of the International Association of Conference Interpreters. There are other organizations, especially in Europe and in the US, that are more on the lines of military personnel who have been trying to get their the support that they had when they were deployed out. So we've worked with them as well. So there are a lot of voices and a lot of collaboration, tons of collaboration, really nice. But on the other hand, there is a lot of work.
What is the role of people who are not linguists, interpreters, or translators, and how can people find out more information about Red Tea?
So the role of a person who is interested in this problem is really to keep it at the forefront of the minds of the government. Make sure that your member of Congress is aware, especially of any linguists who are being left in Afghanistan. We must make sure that we don't forget them. Writing letters, supporting the open letters, advocating. In terms of getting in touch with Red Tea, we are on Facebook and on Twitter at The Red Tea. So that's where we are constantly posting now in terms of where it stands with each national government. So how many linguists are out for Germany and what they're doing, that kind of information is available right away on Twitter. We have a website, red-tea.org, and you can go there. And we also have an opportunity to donate there.
Rebecca Petras, thank you so very much.
Colorado is undeniably in another wave of COVID, and this one is affecting young children unlike any other in the past. State epidemiologist Dr. Rachel Herlihy gave details about the rapid rise in pediatric cases in this week's Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment media briefing.
So note that the rate that we are seeing in 6 to 11-year-olds is actually the highest that rate has been since the beginning of the pandemic. Similarly, we have seen rates in that 12 to 17-year-old group that have been this high before. But right now, I think what stands out to me is that our children, so children 6 to 11 years old and 12 to 17-year-olds, are really where we're seeing the highest rates of disease transmission in the state. And again, this is really the first time in the pandemic that we're really seeing this high rate in our younger children.
Herlihy says that unvaccinated children are now at higher risk than at any other time in the pandemic and shared concrete measures to curb spread of the virus.
Masks in school have certainly received a lot of attention in recent days, and obviously masks in schools are an incredibly important intervention, but masks outside of schools are also incredibly important and something that we need to be keeping in mind as our kids are out and about. Those of us that are vaccinated might feel more comfortable being out and about, but we need to remember that our children that are too young to be vaccinated continue to be incredibly vulnerable, more vulnerable than they've been in the past, unfortunately. And so while we are, recognizing this increased risk in our children, we need to be taking additional precautions. And so now would really not be the ideal time to be bringing unvaccinated children to large gatherings. And keeping in mind all of those things that we were really doing to protect our kids a year ago, all of those social distancing strategies, those things continue to be important now. But also back in schools, obviously this isn't just about masks in schools, and our school guidance talks to a layered approach. And so all of the strategies we've been using, masks, hand washing, distancing, ventilation, testing, and we're going to talk more about testing today, continue to be really important. And of course, the most important intervention we have continues to be vaccines.
But the coronavirus isn't the only virus spreading at rapid rates among young children in Colorado. In the media briefing, Herlihy showed a slide with a sharp curve upwards over previous years. It wasn't COVID, but rather another respiratory illness known as RSV.
So I want to talk a little bit about RSV, or respiratory syncytial virus. This is data that our colleagues at Children's Hospital Colorado have provided to us. And if you look at the far left of this figure, you'll see a green line, and that is showing you RSV cases at Children's Hospital for 2021-22 and comparing them to previous seasons. And what stands out in this figure is really the timing of this increase. Typically, RSV is a respiratory pathogen that we see in the wintertime. So we typically start to see increases sometime in November, December, a peak typically around February. And unfortunately, we're seeing a really rapid rise in these cases of RSV. And this is a virus that can cause severe illness in children, especially very young children, and results in high hospitalization rates. At the same time, we're also concerned about what this fall could look like as far as influenza. We have started to see some influenza cases in the state. And so, unfortunately, I think what our children are going to face this fall is not just the challenge of COVID-19, but also the challenge of RSV and influenza.
CDPHE's COVID-19 incident commander, Scott Bookman, says that regular testing is once again critical to keeping viral spread in check.
Percent positivity is a great leading indicator of where things are headed. Our goal, as established by the World Health Organization, has always been to keep percent positivity below 5%, meaning that we have a good sense of where all cases are and have the ability to keep everything under control. You can see that our percent positivity has been going up since the middle of the summer. As of today, our 7-day average percent positivity is 6.22%. And on the next slide, I really want to take this moment to remind all Coloradans that, we currently have 97 community testing sites available throughout the state. Testing is an absolutely critical part of keeping this pandemic under control within Colorado. For all people who feel symptomatic, for people who are exposed to confirmed cases of COVID, we recommend testing. And we certainly want to make sure that all Coloradans understand where all of our community sites are, and that that capacity exists and that they are free and available to everyone.
And now it's time for an update on what's going on in the world of cannabis with our cannabis correspondent. Now it's time for an update on what's going on in the world of cannabis with our cannabis correspondent, Leland Rucker. He is the senior editor at thenewstation.com. Leland, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good to be here.
All right. So tell us about what you've got here. We're looking at some education funding.
Yeah, this is something that I find very interesting. The Colorado Secretary of State's office said last week that supporters of Initiative 25 have gathered enough signatures to secure a spot on the upcoming ballot. And that's 125,000 signatures. That's pretty good. And they said that they easily met that. And that would impose a 3% sales tax on recreational marijuana starting January the 1st and increasing to 5% by January the 1st, 2024, so in 2 years, at which point it would generate about $138 million a year. That's what they're saying. That 5% tax is in addition to the existing 15% state sales tax on recreational marijuana that's already in place. So that would add, in 2 years, 5% to that amount. And its main purpose is to help the LEAP program, the Colorado Learning Enrichment and Academic Progress Program, and that directs money toward tutoring, after-school programs, academic summer camps, and it gives low- and middle-income families a $1,500 stipend to have school-age children participate in after-school programs. So it's a good, you know, this is a good program. This is a good idea. And people who are behind this are touting it as a way to close learning gaps between low-income students and more well-off students. And that's gaps that many educators, parents, and advocates fear might have widened during the pandemic, which, you know, might have, yeah. And low-income students would be prioritized to receive assistance from this initiative. It's got bipartisan backing from Republicans and Democrats. Former Democratic Governor Bill Ritter is behind it. Former Republican Governor Bill Owens is behind it. And the opponents, though, say that what this is doing, it's going to help pave the way for school voucher programs to get a foothold in Colorado. Currently, there are no school voucher programs in the state of Colorado, and it would give money to those who don't want to send their children to public schools. That's basically what the voucher program is all about. But in June, the Colorado Education Association withdrew its support for the proposal over concerns about how it's going to be implemented. And I'm going to say the marijuana industry is generally anxious about increasing the taxes on their products for consumers. They worry about how it might affect social equity programs, for instance. And I guess my main question is, why is this falling on marijuana users?
I was wondering the same thing. Have you heard anything about that? Why?
You know, why not a tax on coffee or alcohol or frozen food or, you know, anything else that people use to pay for this? You know, I just don't want to go down the road of every time the state needs money, it says, oh, well, let the pot smokers pay for it. I just don't think that's a real good analysis. Although now even Governor Polis recently, he was talking about trying to get rid of the income tax in Colorado. And he said, there are things you actually want to penalize in society, like pollution might be one of them. I would argue that smoking might be one of them, cigarette taxes, sin taxes, if there's an applicable cost to people. And I'm not sure that that's really the road that we want to go down when we come to this. The other main question that I have about this is that marijuana tax money is being used for education already. There's a part of Amendment 64 was a commitment to spend $40 million every fiscal year to renovate existing school buildings, constructing new buildings in rural areas that can't afford it and rural school districts that can't afford it. And that's been increased in 2018. The state legislature increased it. There's also $1 million a year going to the school bullying prevention and education grant programs, $5.4 million to early literacy competitive grant programs, $2 million to dropout prevention programs, $11.9 million to school health professional grant programs, and an undetermined amount to the state public school fund. So that's almost $60 million a year from marijuana tax money that's already going toward some kind of educational thing. So it's just a, you know, this is something that we have to think about, and I think that voters especially should consider, is this something that they really want to do or not?
Well, I think it's a good question to think ahead and plan on what we're going to tax and what the purpose of that is. And so thank you for keeping this on our radar. Leland Leland, again, is the senior editor at thenewsstation.com. You can catch the Cannabis Report here on KGNU on the first and third Thursday of every month. Leland, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Good to be here.
For KGNU, I'm Hanalee Myers.
And that does it for today's Morning Magazine here on listener-supported community radio. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, Elena Claver, Hanalee Myers, and Rosanna Longo-Better for their contributions to today's program.